Hi everyone, this is Steve. Welcome to Pacific Life Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to check out our website, pacificlifechurch.org, and subscribe to our email list. The email is actually the best way to keep up with everything going on around here at PLC. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation will inspire you to follow Jesus, love each other, and serve your neighbors.
And this just in, a heartwarming report of a man who was paralyzed but can now walk again.
The blind can see, the deaf can hear, the paralyzed are walking.
It is unbelievable.
Have you heard about this man? We've seen countless amazing things.
There are so many miracles to report.
Breaking news, a man raised from the dead after 3 days of being in the tomb.
We're doing a series talking about the good news, and today we're going to talk about some of the things that Jesus taught, and that's really, really good news. You know, Jesus is considered by most people in the world today to be a great teacher, and even people that disagreed with Jesus, even people like Gandhi said Jesus was a great teacher, even though he was Hindu, and there are professors that are atheists that say, however, Jesus was a good teacher. So he is pretty much universally recognized, even by other religions of people that don't believe that he was who he said he was, that he was a great teacher. And so we're gonna talk about that aspect of Jesus today. So, you know, when he was 30 years old, Jesus began his public ministry. And when Jesus began to teach, he would go out to the synagogues, and he would go out to the hillsides, and he would go out to countryside. And thousands and thousands of people would gather around because they wanted to hear about this new teacher and some of the things that he had to say. You always have to remember, when you think of Jesus teaching, and kind of like, you know, there's different versions of Jesus, but he was a rabbi. He was a Jewish rabbi, okay? And so he's there, and the masses are gathered because they want to hear this guy, because they've never heard anything like this. As a matter of fact, here are some of the things that they were saying about Jesus when they heard him. So if you go to Matthew chapter 7, verses 28 and 29, it says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, for he taught with real authority, quite unlike the teachers of the religious law. Now, what that meant was, you have to know, in that time, there were a lot of rabbis, you know, and there was religious leaders. And they pretty much all taught along the same line, and they all sort of quoted each other. You know, this is, you know, Rabbi Shlemiel or whoever, you know, and they're quoting him, and this is what he says, and this is what. And then Jesus comes along, and this actually comes from one of his very first messages called the Sermon on the Mount. It's very, very popular, and so he speaks, and people, they're like, we have never heard anything like this before. Like, this is radically different, and it's amazing. In John 7:46 says, we have never heard anyone speak like this. And this is coming from, now this is an interesting situation. So one time, when towards the end of the ministry of Jesus, they're out to get him. And so the religious leaders send out the guards from the temple, and they say, arrest him. And so these guards, they're not Romans. These are Jewish men, guards from the temple. And they're going to get him. But before they can get him, they have to sit there and wait for Jesus to finish. And by the time Jesus finished, they came back and they go, why didn't you arrest him? And they said, we've never heard anybody like him. In Matthew 22:16, this is really interesting because this is coming from his enemies. And the Pharisees come up to him. These were some religious leaders. And they said, we know how honest you are and that you teach the way of God truthfully and that you're impartial and you don't play favorites. So again, just a great teacher recognized by many, even people that didn't like him. When Jesus was 12 years old, the Bible records that he went to the Passover feast, which he did every year with his family. Think of yourself, well, I mean, maybe you grew up in a family, every year, you know, you made it over to Disneyland or something. Well, in this particular time, if you were a good Jewish boy in good standing, your family would probably go to the Passover, and so he did. And when they got there, Jesus, apparently for a couple of days, he couldn't find him. So let me read this to you. Luke 2:45-47 says, when they couldn't find him, remember, they went to Jerusalem to search for him, and 3 days later, they finally discovered him in the temple, sitting among the religious leaders, listening to them and asking questions. And all who heard him were amazed. There's that word again. They were amazed at his understanding and his answers. 12 years old, child prodigy. You're like, who is this guy anyway? Later on, the people who heard the teachings of Jesus had questions. You know, so there came that time when people were like, well, wait a second. Where is this guy getting his learning from, his information from? Like, what schools did he go to be this sharp and this wise? And so in John, they'd ask him in John 7:15, the people were surprised when they heard him. How does this man know so much when he hasn't been trained, they asked. And so Jesus told them, my message is not my own. It comes from God who sent me. In other words, everybody else, all the other rabbis, they're getting there. They're just quoting each other. You know, they're looking at the law. That's a good thing. He goes, but I'm getting, what I'm teaching you is coming straight from the Father. So here's my question and my challenge to you, because we're going to get into his teachings. Have you actually taken the time to get familiar with the teachings of Jesus? You know, when you open up your New Testament and you see those red letters, yeah, that's Jesus and talking. And so have you, like, read that? And have you learned that? And have you studied that? And have you, and the reason I'm saying this is a lot of times I talk to people who really, they've been churchgoers for a long time and call themselves to be Christians, and they know very little about the teachings of Jesus. So I'm not here to rebuke you or scold you. I'm just here to say, man, lean in, because it's good. I mean, it's really good. And all these people that say he's a great teacher, well, yeah, we should know that more than anybody else. So this is what Jesus said in Luke 19:10. And this is really not just about his teaching, but it was about his purpose and his mission. And he said, for the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. In other words, Jesus is saying, look, I didn't just come to be a great teacher, and he was a great teacher, but I was on mission. And my mission is to save people who don't know me, know my Father. And that was the sole purpose. And so everything that he taught was about connecting people with his Father, all of those teachings that he did. And so today what I want to do is I want to draw your attention to what I consider to be some of the most important things that Jesus taught. This week, I took my New Testament and the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and I just started digging. I just started reading and reading through all the things that Jesus taught. And one more time, even though I've read the New Testament hundreds of times, one more time, I was like, he actually taught on more than I even thought he taught on. He pretty much addresses almost every subject that is pertinent to you and I today, relevant to you and I today. And this is one of the reasons that people love to listen to him, because he wasn't like some college professor waxing eloquent, trying to blow everybody away with some abstract ideas that nobody could relate to. He spoke in a language that people could understand. He spoke in a way where he would tell stories and people would just lean in and go, wow, it's an amazing story. But his stories always had a purpose. And he was centered around people and where people live and people's situations. So we're going to go straight to the first one here. This is the first thing that grabbed my attention was he taught people how to be happy. Now, the reason I put this first is because the more I talk to people, the more I meet people from all over the place, and I've had the opportunity to be in a lot of other countries, and I've been blessed that way. But I ask them, you know, like, what are you after in life? What is it you're after? And they always say the same thing. I just want to be happy. So it's awesome that the very first message, we call it the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus comes out, and he talks about how to be happy. As a matter of fact, I did a little Google search, because I was wondering, because I thought, how I know how many books have been written about how to be happy? And get this, in the last 200 years of history, universally, millions of books have been written about how to be happy. Like, we want to know, how can I be happy? So Jesus starts talking about that, which basically he comes out with this is how to be happy sermon. And I want you just for a moment to travel through time and space and maybe you've been there before, actually go to the place on the mount where Jesus was. And you're sitting there with hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, and you're like, okay, what has this guy got to say? Okay. And he starts talking to you about how to be happy. Now, what I did is I used a different translation today. Usually it says, blessed are you. But it actually, blessed actually means happy are you. And so I thought I'd just go with that. So in verse 5:3, it says, happy are the people who know they need God very much. Now, as I go through these, I want you to think from maybe even from a cultural perspective, how we think, yeah, the ways to get happy. And if this, does this like connect with you? Does this register with you when you hear this? Is like, oh, so Jesus said, you know, right there, the first thing that you need to do is to experience your need for, like, you need to know that you need God. That's the starting point. I think most of us would agree with that. And then he said, verse 4, happy are the people who are sad. God will come near to them. Now, that's probably not what you're thinking. You're like, that's actually what I'm trying to avoid. I want to be happy, not sad. Verse 5, happy are the people who are kind. The whole earth will belong to them. Verse 6, happy are the people who want to obey God as much as they want to eat food. I like that, the way you said that. Like, okay. Verse 7, happy are the people who help other people who forgive them. Happy are the people who help other people and forgive them. All right. So as we're tracking along here, is this the way you've thought about being happy in the past? Because it's not the way the culture necessarily thinks about how to be happy. Verse 8, happy are the people who have only good thoughts. They will come near to God and they will see him. Verse 9, happy are the people who bring people together to be friends. God will call them his children. Verse 10, happy are the people who do what is right, but other people hurt them because of it. The kingdom of heaven belongs to people like that. Now, you're still on the hillside, and you've heard Jesus teaching this. What are your first thoughts about that? You might be going, that's not really what I thought. That's going to make me happy? And it actually will, but I think the problem is that a lot of people that have never tried it. Jesus goes, this is your creator says, this is how to be happy. And so many people are like, yeah, you know, it sounds kind of cool, and it's very poetic, very beautiful sounding. I just don't know if that's going to make me happy. And as the greatest teacher that he was, I would say to you, hey, try it. Try it. Just see if it works. The second thing that Jesus taught us is that we should always forgive. Now, this is a problem that every human being has. Conflict, misunderstandings. I mean, all of our life, we're gonna deal with it. So you can imagine when Jesus began to teach about forgiveness, you know, people were like, oh, you know, maybe I want to get this one here because I got some stuff going on in my life. And so one of the methods that Jesus used, and it's a great method, he loved to tell stories. He was a master storyteller. In fact, he often used questions. And in this particular situation, there was actually a question that came to him that got this whole conversation going about forgiveness. And the person who brought the question to him was one of his disciples. His name was Peter. Now, before we read this, what you need to know about Peter is I have a feeling that because if you ever did a personality profile on Peter, you would know that he's kind of a bull in a china shop. You would know that he speaks first before sometimes he thinks it through, foot in the mouth kind of guy. And so he's probably a guy that had to like work on the forgiveness issue quite a bit because he offended people. So in chapter 18 of Matthew, this is what it says, beginning with verse 21. And then Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? Now, I find this to be really interesting because the rabbis of the day said you only had to forgive people three times, and then after that, you didn't have to forgive them. And so, you know, Peter comes to Jesus and he's thinking, okay, I'll double it and then I'll add one. And then Jesus will pat me on the shoulder and go, Peter, you are the man. Let's see what happens. Does he do it? No, not seven times, Jesus replied, but 77 times. And then Peter fainted. That's probably what he felt like. And it says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king. So this is where he tells the story, who decided to bring this his account up to date with the servants who had borrowed money from him. In the process, one of his debtors was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. He couldn't pay, so his master ordered that he be sold along with his wife, his children, everything that he owned to pay the debt. But the man fell before his master and he begged him, please, be patient with me, and I will pay it all. And then his servant was filled with pity for him, and he released him, and he forgave his debt. It's a huge debt. But when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars, and he grabbed him by the throat, and he demanded instant payment. And his fellow servant fell down before him, and he begged him for a little more time. Be patient with me. I will pay it, he pleaded, but his creditor wouldn't wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. When some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. And they went to the king and they told him everything that had happened. And then the king called in the man that he had forgiven. And he said, you evil servant, I forgave you the tremendous debt that you pleaded with me about. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? Then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his entire debt. That's what my heavenly Father, will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brother and your sisters from your heart. Wow. What a great lesson on how to forgive and actually the need to forgive other people. And really, the big idea in this story is that, and I think you should have caught it, if God forgives us of all the things we've done, and we've done a lot, then we should forgive other people who have hurt us in the same way. Jesus taught us that we should not be judgmental. Now, this is another problem. This is a huge problem because we tend to be pretty judgmental. I mean, it's just part of the human experience, a part of the human race, really. There'll be times, even if you're the most awesome person, even if you just get along with everybody and everybody goes, oh, you're an amazing person, and they say good things about you. Every once in a while, there's going to be that time when you are going to be tempted to want to judge somebody. You're going to say maybe about somebody, you know, they got a big ego. Or they're kind of lazy. Or they're superficial. And kind of shallow. You know, just those are judgments that we make about people. Here's what I've discovered about myself. And I hate this sometimes. The very thing that I don't like that I see in you is the thing that I'm actually struggling with in me. Man, I'll put one out there. I can't stand seeing angry people. When I see people get really angry, there's that judgmental thing. I can't believe they're so ugly, the way their face, and they yelled and they screamed and everything. And yet I struggle with anger sometimes. I mean, it looks so awful on them, but when it's on me, well, it's justified, right? And so Jesus talks about that. So I just for a moment, I want you to think about, before we read this, I want you to think about what is it inside of you that really bugs you about other people? And is there a possibility that maybe you struggle with that? And that maybe that's why it bothers you so much? Just think for a moment about that. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, Jesus just put it out there. He said, do not judge others and you will not be judged, for you will be treated as you treat others. The standard that you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. Now think about that for a moment. What Jesus said right there, he says, if you are super judgmental and critical of other people, that's what you get back. I don't want that. I don't think you want that either. But he just said that's the way it works. And so the more judgmental you are, the more judgment you're going to get. And so Jesus continued to speak. He said, why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own eye? Jesus, one of the things that he used was a method called hyperbole. And hyperbole is just extreme exaggeration. And it's actually a form of humor. You know, when Jesus said that, some of the people were like, ah, good one, Jesus, you know. And they got what he was saying. But he was using this to really, really drive home a point. In verses 4 and 5, he says, how can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? And then he said, hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you'll see well enough to know how to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. This is like to caution us against, you know, going over to somebody and going, hey, bro, I was watching you. Let me tell you about you. And you're going to tell us something, and you got the same thing. You got maybe even more of it going on than they do. I mean, how many of you have ever had somebody do that to you? Come over, and they're going to give you a little lecture. And as they're giving the lecture to you, you're thinking to yourself, are you kidding me? You're lecturing me about this? Like, you're way worse than I am. And that's exactly what Jesus is talking about here. That's why we need to really, really be careful about being judgmental. And by the way, have we ever lived in our culture in a time when there's more people judging? I mean, people getting canceled, people getting, you know, just fighting on social media, all the political division we have. And by the way, this is an election year. Oh boy. And so judgment comes pretty quick and pretty easy too. So this is a good year. I'll preach to me, Steve, knock it off. Quit being so critical. Quit judging so much. It's hard. We're going to need some help from Jesus this year. And then Jesus taught about greed and generosity. And by the way, he talked about this a lot. And so I love what Jesus does here is he uses a live situation to do his teaching. And so before we get into what he actually said in this situation, what you need to know is that Jesus talked, again, I'm just going to say it again, he talked about this a lot. In fact, 29 times Jesus talks about greed and generosity and money. And like, why does Jesus talk about that so much? Because we struggle with that a lot. I mean, it's where we live. We live in a very materialistic culture today. And we want, and we want, and we want. It was the same back then. So, Luke 12, verses 13 and 14. Then someone called from the crowd, teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me. And Jesus replied, friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that? Let me just say that this is a live, ongoing situation in thousands of families in America today. Because generational money is being passed down, like it's never been passed down before. I used to, as a pastor, you know, people come to me with problems and things like this. And I remember hearing, this is a problem that would quite frequently I'd hear about. And they'd go, you know, and it was kind of like Jesus right there. And they're going, Jesus, do something, you know. And people come to me and they go, I'm struggling with my brother and my sister and my family. And they're unfair and all these things. And I'm like, oh, wow. And if I'm being truthful, I was a little critical, a little judgmental until it happened to me. And then my parents passed, and I thought it was all going to be, you know, good. And there was a living trust. I have two sisters, two younger sisters, and it wasn't good. And it got messy, and there was misunderstandings, and it got kind of crazy. And I could tell you this, for 2 years, it was kind of a two-year process that we were going through. I just felt like I was coming to the end of myself. And I kept having to preach to myself, Steve, don't be that guy. You know, don't be greedy. Don't let this get the best of you. There was a lot of misunderstanding and things going on, and we were trying to go through this process. And I called certain people up, and I go, you got to help me, man. I'm just like, I'm not handling this well. And this is one of the reasons that it's good if you're going through something like this, pray about it, but then bring some other people into it. Have them pray with you. Get some wise counsel. And I did. And I'm happy to tell you that I got through that process good. Me and Jesus are good. My heart's good. But man, it's tough. So Jesus is gonna deal with this. Let's read it in Luke chapter 6. Let's see what happens here. Luke chapter 12, beginning with verse 16. Then he told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. Now, as I'm reading this story, I want you to consider that what happens here and the way that this man sort of positions himself, and this guy in the story, is really, it's the American dream. This is the American dream right here. So here we go again. A rich man had a fertile farm. Let's start with the rich man. This guy is wealthy. He's got it going on. That produced fine crops. And he said to himself, now what I want you also to pay attention to in this is how many times he refers to himself and I and me. He said to himself, what should I do? I do not have room for all of my crops. And then he said, I know, I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. The American dream. So let's see what God has to say about this American dream. But God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. And then who will get everything that you worked for? Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. The point Jesus was making, it was okay for this guy to have all this stuff. God has nothing against wealth, but this guy was all about him. But not one point in this story did the guy say, so that I can help my family, so that I can help my neighbors, so I can bless a lot of other people. He just made it all about him. And that's the warning that Jesus gives in that story. And then Jesus also talks about generosity. So he kind of, in actually Luke chapter 12, verse 12 through 6, or Luke 6, he says, verse 38, there's a generosity principle that he talks about. And some of you may have read this. He says, given you'll receive, your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. The amount that you give will determine the amount that you get back. How many of us actually believe that principle? You know, it's I believe it, but it's one that you can struggle with because we have a tendency to sort of cling on to stuff and go, no, I worked hard for this and this didn't come easy, you know, and I don't know about that like giving principle, but if you tried it, then you know how it works. Like you give, it comes back to you and you're like, oh my gosh, Jesus was right. Jesus also taught us how to pray. I especially like this teaching because praying can be difficult and confusing and frustrating and complicated for some people, especially if they've never prayed. If they're not people of faith and they're like, well, like how does prayer work? So one time Jesus was with his disciples, and his disciples, apparently they heard him praying and they were so impressed. They said, hey, Jesus, can you teach us how to pray? Because I'm sure that these disciples had heard a lot of people praying, but when they heard Jesus pray, they were like, whoa. We've never heard anybody pray like he prays. We want to know how to pray like Jesus prays. And so Jesus taught them what we call the Lord's Prayer. How many of you know the Lord's Prayer? Yeah, some of you by memory know the Lord's Prayer. And so he teaches this prayer, and this prayer is such a profound, beautiful prayer, and it's really kind of a foundational prayer. It covers all the bases. It's a prayer that I pray almost daily, especially if I'm a little unfocused in my prayers. I go right to the Lord's Prayer because it helps me to get right after some of the most important things. And so here's the way it reads. It says, this then is how you ought to pray. And let's just say it together. Let's read it together. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. It's like the perfect prayer right there. So Jesus teaches them how to pray. And then in Matthew verses chapter 6, verses 7, it says, and when you pray, so he elaborates a little bit more And I noticed the subtitle in my Bible in this one was, it was called Effective Prayer. So it's prayer is communication. We ought to pray daily and communicate with God. But then sometimes you want to take it to another level. And you're like, no, I need a breakthrough. Like, I want to pray, and man, I need some answers here. And so Jesus, talking about that, said, keep on asking and you'll receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking and you'll find. Keep on knocking and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, everyone who seeks finds, and to everyone who knocks, the door will be open. And what he's really talking about, he's talking about persistence. He's talking about persistence. And sometimes we're not very good at that. Sometimes we'll ask for a little while, and then we get impatient, and we're like, well, I'll go find my answer somewhere else. And here's the thing. When Jesus was teaching this, I've heard, you know, prosperity preachers use this in all the wrong way, completely take it out of context and everything. It doesn't mean you're going to get the answer that you want necessarily. Because when you keep knocking, sometimes God says, got an answer for you. What is it? No. That's the answer? No is the answer. But here's the thing. You have to know that if your heavenly Father says no, it's for a good reason. It's because he loves you. It's because he cares for you. Here's something else he'll say. Sometimes we even hate this more than no. Wait. Wait. We're like, trying. But if you wait, man, God, when he comes through, he will bless you so much. So he teaches us about prayer. And then finally, and that we could go on and on, but we're just kind of doing samplings of the teachings of Jesus. Jesus taught us what it would cost to be a disciple. And this is one I don't think a lot of people got. In fact, I know it's one that not a lot of people got, because one day in chapter 6, we're not going to go there, but in John chapter 6, Jesus started to really get down to the nitty-gritty of what it meant to be a disciple. And this is just after, you know, he'd been feeding people bread and everybody was loving the free meals and everybody was like, oh man, he does miracles. It's awesome. Jesus, you're the man. And then on this particular day, Jesus said, okay, now we're gonna talk about what it means to be a disciple. And sadly, a bunch of disciples got up and left that day, or a bunch of people just said, no, we can't handle this. And so even though he was a great teacher, that wasn't the sole purpose of his teaching. It was to teach us who he was and why we needed him and how to be a disciple. So let me turn to Luke chapter 14. Brace yourself if you've never read this before. This is what it says, beginning with verse 25. A large crowd was following Jesus, and he turned around and he said to them, if you want to be my disciple, you must by comparison hate everyone else. Your father, your mother, wife, children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Now, I'm just kind of imagining that his disciples are with him and they're cringing. And they're thinking, Jesus, we got thousands of people here. This is some of the, like, we're on a roll. This is like the biggest crowd we've had. They love you. I mean, they are just, look at them. They're hanging on every word that you say. This is a really bad marketing strategy. What are you saying? Why are you saying this? Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. And if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. But don't begin until you count the cost. And this is really important, because I think, you know, for years and years and years, I've been preaching and teaching the gospel and sharing Jesus with people. And there's always that part of me that wants to say to them, oh man, you need to do this because it's going to be so easy, and it'll just be like roses and rainbows and God, you know, and there's an aspect of that. God will bless your life, but I refuse to do the bait and switch. I'm just not going to do it. I can't say something that Jesus didn't say. And Jesus, when he called people to discipleship, he said, this is what it looks like to be a true disciple and to actually follow me. And so basically he's saying, count the cost. But don't begin until you count the cost. For who would begin a construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. And they would say, there's the person who started that building. They couldn't afford to finish it. Wow. Have you counted the cost of what it means to be a true disciple? Our staff, Tony, Sarah, Lucy, Maki, some of our leaders, we've been talking about this because I believe that one of the reasons that, and I've mentioned this before, that COVID just killed churches. I mean, most churches, including ours, are about half what they used to be. It's because the people that were coming weren't true disciples. I'm not saying all of them. And maybe it's partially our fault. Maybe we didn't emphasize discipleship enough. That's something that we really are going to drill down on in the most beautiful way. Because Jesus didn't hold back. He says, if you're going to follow me, it's going to cost you everything. But you know what you get in return? You get everything and more. Well, I think we can all agree that Jesus was a great teacher, but he was more than that. He was the Messiah. He was our Lord. He was our King. He was our Savior. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to prepare for a time of communion and coming together. So let me pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you sent your Son Jesus into this world to be one of us, 100% human, confined by time and space, knew what it was like to have a hard day, to sweat, to hurt, to experience rejection, to experience frustration, just to experience the human condition, and yet be sinless. We thank you, Lord, that your Son laid it all on the line, all the way to the cross, all the way to a crucifixion for us. Because he did for us what we just simply could not do for ourselves. He saved us, forgave us, and is changing our lives. Lord, my prayer is if there's someone here or someone online right now listening to this, that they'll hear your words, not mine. Jesus, your words. Come, pick up your cross and follow me. Oh, what a beautiful death it'll be when we begin to die to our ego, die to so many of the things that we thought made us who we were, and we begin to see and experience the resurrection life of Jesus coming into our life and beginning to change us into the people that he wanted us to be fully human, God, in the way that you designed us to be. So in this moment, pray that you open up hearts. Right now, if you are not there, if you've never really truly been a disciple, right now, why don't you just say, Jesus, today I choose to pick up the cross. I choose to die to my way, even to my dreams, and to follow you. And whatever that means, whatever that looks like, I choose to follow you. And thank you. Thank you for dying for me. Thank you for forgiving me. Thank you for giving me a new life.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. If you'd like prayer to connect with us, please go to our website at pacificlifechurch.org, and we would love to connect with you.